As an entrepreneur, you need to be leveraging tools and software to run your business as smoothly and efficiently as possible. That is why I'm delighted to partner with Sage for this season of the pod. Sage is the global market leader for technology that helps small and medium businesses perform at their best. To learn more about Sage, go to sage.com or click the link in the pod description.
People say to me in the past, how did you manage to get GlaxoSmithKline? And I said, well, you went down and you knocked on the front door and you just didn't go until they gave you the business.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of the Entrepreneur Experiment Podcast with me, Gary Fox. Before we start, I want to direct you to my website. Go to mrgaryfox.com. Join the newsletter for your chance to win €1,500. Today, I'm chatting to Paul Connell, the founder and CEO of Pure Telecom. Paul is an absolute character. This is an uncensored and unfiltered chat about his story as an entrepreneur. He's taken on and beaten the massive players in the telecom space. We hear exactly how he did that, his sideline and bomb disposal early in his career, and just why broadband is so damn hard to get in Ireland. We cover it all. Here is my chat with Paul Connell, the founder and CEO of Pure Telecom. Paul, welcome to the pod.
Thanks, Gary.
I feel like we've been chatting for hours. We nearly got carried away there and forgot to hit record.
Get out my glass of wine and a few cheese and biscuits and we'll be off.
Kind of felt like we're heading that way, yeah. I felt if it didn't hit record then, we'd be here 2 hours later still chatting. How's the form?
Great. No, I can't complain. Obviously got the COVID, got over it fairly easily, like a lot of people, and thankfully. And business is going well, so I can't complain in any sense. Well, my wife still loves me.
Well, that was a very short pod, Paul. Thanks for coming on. Life is good.
See you next week for the update.
So what's been happening? I used to a few years ago when the oldest started, I used to be like, okay, we'll briefly touch on COVID and then we'll move on. But now you kind of have to, it's been 2 years. So you kind of have to.
Don't talk about COVID. We won't talk.
So it's like, COVID. Okay, first of all, we better figure out what you do.
Yes. Well, I'm an accountant by trade, and I get into trouble for saying this, but my wife used to say to me, I'm the worst accountant I've ever met. Years ago, I trained, I got involved in telecoms, and during the dot-com boom, we did very well. And out of that, we set up our darling Pure Telecom that we have here today.
You hide the accountancy bit well. I'd never have guessed it now, to be fair.
Yeah.
It's clearly a while since you had
something
the
else, Gary, and I won't. Funny you say that, because my son is just after starting an internship with KPMG. He's doing the exact same as I'm doing. And I'd recommend anyone to do it, because it gives you, it's like doing maths for your leaving cert. It gives you the basis to be able to go through life and pick out the numbers and understand items. And I did it. I never saw myself continuing in practice, but it was a great basis. As what a fella said to me when I came out of college, you've got your academic degree, now you need a professional qualification. Got that, and then the world's your oyster. And actually, to be fair, it's a long time ago now, but it did me well.
Probably holds true even more today when a degree is just the basic entry. You know, if it's just that's the degree is the new leaving cert, really. So, I mean, to get a professional qualification is huge.
Yeah, I sometimes think, though, we bypass a lot of people who just aren't academic at all, who are brilliant in other ways. And we force them, well, we don't force them, but we encourage them into college, and we encourage them to open books that really, I've met some brilliant sales guys, some brilliant entrepreneurs in my time. And it's, you know, did college do anything for them? I do think college, and as I say, the accountancy gives you a great background. I trained with BDO Simpson Xavier, who was a fabulous firm at the time. I'm sure it still is. And the experience I got in dealing with clients from the very smallest to the very largest has been immeasurable, and it's kept me. You know, it's good to be grounded as well. You know, somebody said to me recently, Gonzaga School, for all their high rollers, send their transition year kids down to Tesco's for a week on their customer service desk. Mm-hmm. You know, if you can deal with some woman or man with a looking for a refund on a sliced pan, you can deal with the head of Google. It's all the same.
You're dead right. There's definitely a hybrid model, I think, you know, something that brings you, okay, get a bit of college, but also the hybrid model of just doing facing people, right? Because that's,
yeah,
it's getting rare, you know, to actually be able to relate to people, talk to people face to face.
Yeah, it's, do you know what? I've brought in graduates into the office and to interview them, and some of them are just as, they can't open their mouths. Mm. And that's very, they might be extremely clever, but if you can't deal with people, it's a big problem. It's like being a doctor, and that's why we went to this, it's not just based on your leaving cert, you do
an aptitude test or suitability test, yeah.
To get you into, can you be a doctor? So can you mix with people? Mm. Can you converse with someone? Can you converse with a patient? And can you converse with a customer? And that's just, I wouldn't say I'm the most intelligent fella in the world, but I do have the ability to look at various, a sheet of numbers, pick out where it's gone wrong, and I'm able to convert. Some people say I can't do it, but so I'm able to get across my point of view, and that's business, you know. Apart from having the balls to kind of get up and take the chance in business, having the ability to kind of speak is essential.
Where do you think I picked it up? Is that always in you, or is that picked up as you went along through the degree or through whatever?
That's, do you know what? That's probably, it is a very good question for me. It's probably the best question you can ask me, because I look at myself and I think, where did I pick this up? Where did I pick up the ability to take a chance? I remember my brothers, I was the youngest, and my brothers used to say to me, you know, around Halloween time, oh yeah, go over into your man's garden and rob that pile of wood and bring it back for our bonfire. And it would be me that would be sent. So you look at that and you think, well, I got my nerve from that. But I play golf every week or most weeks, and I'm pretty crap at playing golf. I'm pretty crap at golf in general. But back in my childhood, when they were all playing golf as kids, I was down in the local golf club getting a fiver a round, and I do three rounds caddying, and I come home and I put the fivers up to my nose and smell them. For me, it was about making the few quid. I went to college. I couldn't wait to get through college to get out there and work.
So it's always been in you then, that bit of...
As I say, I have five children, and how do you get it across to them? And I have debates and chats in our house about the value of money. And it's, you know, without being an old fogey, or as my kids call me, a boomer, you know, to get across the value, and most of them, actually, I don't know, they all have it, and they all appreciate the value of money. And not in a mean way. I hate that. Mm-hmm.
It's a big difference. Greed. Huge difference. Huge difference.
It's not, you know, you have to be able to, you have to be able to spend it. You have to be able to give it away. You have to be able to, you know, one of the things with COVID at the moment, I feel it's incumbent upon me. If I go out for a meal, I might have given 20 quid tip in the past, and you up that to 30 or 40 quid tip, and just use what you're now the customer. You can help people out as well. So it's important to kind of spread it around a little bit. As I said, I'm not a multimillionaire by any stretch of the imagination.
But little things make a difference.
It's so important.
You did your qualification, and you then did you go working straight in telecoms, or what was your path into it?
No, I went off to the States, came back from the States, still working as an accountant, and I got involved with a print and packaging company, and they wanted to go onto the London Stock Exchange. Went into them. We floated in 95, I think it was 96, onto the London Stock Exchange. That was a massive success. Unfortunately, print and packaging took a bit of a worldwide downturn at that point. And I started looking around. I came across a company that was a telecoms company, and the MD or the CEO said to me, look, I know we're looking for a CFO, but I'm actually really looking for a commercial animal. And I went, oh, that's me. That's definitely, you've got the right guy here. And he says, I just need you to get out there and beat the shit out of people. And I said, oh, this, you've got me. Where do I sign? And so I did that. And then they were taken over by another company in a US company that GTS, who were carrying something like 25% of Europe's traffic at the time, telecoms traffic. They were a wholesaler. And I was just saying to someone there this morning, I was in my 20s or maybe late 20s, and I was working my ass off. I just never went home. I just, you want me to do that? Oh, can I have more money? Yeah, do you want me to do that? Can I have more money? And to such an extent, I said to my wife and my partner at the time, we'll be on that beach sooner than you think. And
what was driving you, Paul? Because it's common, but not that common. People generally have they'll only do so much. What was driving you?
Oh, no. I say this to my kids. You work your ass off. If you work your ass off when you're younger, then when you get to be my age and you're in your wheelchair, that you can step back from it a little bit. But you have to work. You have to put... And my wife would think the exact same way.
Okay.
She would... Her attitude would be, as I say, when it all came to GTS, the job I was working for initially, when they went wallop, they were losing $600 million a quarter. My boss in the States rang me and he said, put the bomb under your chair and walk out the front door. And for the first time ever, I was at home for a day, literally kind of going, what am I going to do? What's the next? And my wife says, well, you can start by putting out the bins. And
the whole company went overnight.
The whole thing went over. What happened was it was the dot-com bang. The equity markets dried up. They were relying on Deutsche Bank for their funding. My boss rings me and says, Deutsche Bank have just refused their last round of funding. And in my stupidity, I went, what does that mean? And he says, put the bomb under your chair and walk out the front door. I'll meet you in London tomorrow and I'll work out a package for you and you can take the package.
Wow.
And that's as quick as it happened.
Had you any indication that might have been coming? Were you preparing for that? Were you looking around?
No, I wouldn't say. As I say, it was a colossal company. They started off, they were an American company in San Francisco. And they set up during the Cold War times the first link between Moscow and San Francisco. They called it the San Francisco teleport. And this wasn't now 1937. It was early 80s. And out of that, they started buying telecoms companies in Russia, then down into Eastern Europe, then into Western Europe, and then over the UK and Ireland. And as I say, they carried 25%. It was a colossal operation, but no operations in the US whatsoever.
Oh.
So, no, it didn't. I I thought somebody would pull the. At one stage, I said to them, seriously, if we're losing 600 million a quarter, would we not be better off just putting the money in the bank? And they said, oh, you don't understand. This is all about market share and grabbing market share. And it was most definitely the emperor wasn't wearing any clothes. But that's, you know, that was the dot-com companies. They didn't make money. They were rolled up on capitalization numbers.
That's kind of happening again now. You see it in the market. You see companies raising a lot of money.
Do you know what? Again, I'm not intelligent enough to look at, you look at some of them and you think, right, where do you build the value? And I don't see the value. But in saying that, I do see... I suppose 7 or 8 years ago, we transformed our company here from being a sales company that made calls to customers. And I was the guy that rang you in the middle of the night. I kind of nearly had to wear a peaked cap when I went out. We went from that to, you know, I'd have fellas working for me in India that would make 300 calls a day and maybe get 3 sales out of those 300 calls. And we transformed from that into a digital marketing approach where we didn't make any calls. And we just spent money on Google Ads and we spent money on digital optimization. And it suddenly we changed around the whole. So I now see the value in Google that I used to never see before. And it's... it's mighty to be able to track that every time you get on your PC or your laptop or your phone, that they are mining data off you and they're using that data to sell to their customers. And it's, you know, you look at, I buy a pair of binoculars on Amazon, I'll get flooded with Amazon ads for binoculars for the next year. So it's quite clever. You look, the way it's, everything has changed now. I was talking to someone there recently about, in the same way as our telecoms have gone from, we don't make calls anymore. It's all about data. It's all about broadband. In the same way with the postal services, it's not about sending letters. It's about parcel delivery. Mm-hmm. It's about logistics. And that's, it's not about, I was asked to do a reference for a shop that's gone online there recently. And 100%, if you're a retail, I don't know anything about retail, but it strikes me as, why would you have a shop on Grafton Street that opens 12 hours a day when you can have a shop online that's open 24 hours a day? And it's, if they can provide you, I know the DHL man, makes 2 visits to our house a day, one to deliver and the second one to collect what he delivered earlier. And that's the way it's gone. It's great. It's fantastic. But
how did you make that change though? Because that's a big difference. What you're doing all outbound. How did you make that switch? Yeah.
Because it suddenly came to us. One of the main issues first, it's the data pool. We talk about that. People's data and people's right to privacy is becoming more and more important. The Data Protection Commissioner 20 years ago, you never heard of. The Data Protection Commissioner is one of the strongest entities in the state today. I must say, every single item of data that we have, we wash. And we are very peculiar, are very particular about what we use data for. So back in the day when we made this decision, we said, right, our pool of data that we can sell to, I can't anymore just buy a list of customers and ring them. And that's becoming smaller and smaller and smaller. So I need to get to these people. I can't get to them, but I need them to get to me. And that was the main driving force of it. Plus the fact, Gary, that, you know, you're bringing in a guy and you're asking him to make 300 calls a day and he's getting three sales out of it. It was such a soul-destroying job. So now I have guys, I have a call center here, and they get inbound calls. Of the inbound calls, they make X number of sales. And, you know, they're actually they're probably some of the best paid people in the building, those guys. They do very well out of it. Now, it does cost me an absolute fortune on a monthly basis as regards digital marketing, ad placement, keyword searches, you name it. It's very, we're doing a new thing at the moment, which I can't really go into, but to make it even more sophisticated, one of the things we did last year when at the start of COVID, we got I'm jumping here a little bit, but we sent everyone home, but we gave them an option of home, office, or redundancy. None of them took redundancy, thankfully. We had a system in play to allow them work from home immediately. But we kind of, halfway through COVID, we kind of said, well, we need to up the scope on that now. And because we're dealing with people through Twitter, through Facebook, through Instagram, you know, all the TikTok, you name it, all the stuff that as a boomer I don't need to understand. But we put in place a system there to capture all those interactions. So if you're a customer of mine and you talk to us in any format, we bring that in and we capture that so that when you do have an issue, or if you, in the very unlikely event that you do have an issue, that we have all your details there, we have all your interactions there. And it's, we look at it as regards every time that we speak to a customer, we have an opportunity to talk to the customer about improved services that we can make. And it kind of works quite well.
I think that's a key difference.
Sorry, I'm on a rant.
No, you're fine, because it's interesting to hear someone, because I think that's the key difference. I mean, how many times on social media you see people complaining about large companies that provide services to them, and they're tweeting and go, getting more and more irate as they go, and then they're calling up call centers and they get more and more irate as they go, and they're tweeting about it. So to see a company going, using Progressively and going, well, actually, this is a chance to talk directly to our consumer, and actually getting that social media is more or less the same as picking up the phone and calling you, I think that's kind of refreshing for people to hear.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? We like to think that because we're not enormous, that we can change to our customer requirements, and we're open to change. But it's so important. You know, I do understand that if you are a large company, particularly selling broadband, the margins on broadband are getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And if I automate a call center, you know, I don't need to employ people, so I can at least get that cost back. But in saying that, my major cost is acquiring a customer. So if I spend my money on acquiring a customer and I put them in an automated service, and I don't deal with their issues, then I lose that customer. And then it's a bit self-defeatist. Then I have to go out and buy them again or acquire them again. And every night I get a list of KPIs about the business. And out of that, I could nearly tell you what my financials are for a month. I could tell you exactly what's going to happen. The key ones to me is how many people have we won that day, but how many people have we lost, our churn for that day? And that's even more important to me. So we spend a lot of time, it's important to get new sales, but if I can keep down the level of customers that I lose, and I'll always lose business, I'll always lose customers. I'm in a volume-based business, but as long as I don't lose them for silly things, like people make mistakes, and people will always make, but you know, we try and limit that. So I used to always say to the guy, your job is to get the customer and wrap him up in cotton wool and just keep him nice and cozy. And then he doesn't want to go anywhere. Price is important. I used to say to people, we get you on price, but we keep you on customer service.
Yeah. And that's still the case. And it's still rare. I rang up, my broadband provider, not yourselves, just a caveat before I tell this story. And I rang him up and I was asking about the new new high speed line that was literally been put up in front of the house that day. And I said, oh, can you tell me when that'll be activated? And she goes, I don't know. I'm looking at the same data you are. And I'm like, great. Thanks for that. That's insightful. She's like, check your national broadband plan. I'm like, I can see your man on the pole outside. I'm like, go out and ask him. It's funny. You ring up sales, 60 seconds connection. You ring up customer service. Your call is important to us. We'll get to you in 15 minutes. Yeah. it's interesting to see from a business owner.
As I say, I do understand why people try and save money, but I do think it's a very short-term thing that if you can't get to people. Now, admittedly, and I put my hand up at the moment during COVID, during the last month or so, there's so many shortages of people, there's so many shortages of availability. Even our suppliers are being hammered that our call volumes are up. And I wouldn't like to use the last month as my typical example of a year with pure telecom. But in the main, we keep our, you know, if you're on the phone for less, more than a minute waiting or a minute and a half, I think it is, it's a problem. But that should be the case. You shouldn't be on the phone waiting for 40 minutes in any sense. You know, I'm delighted when I hear some of my competitors getting into that kind of trouble.
I'll tell you who they are after the pot. Yeah. But bring me back, right? Bring me back to when you lit the fuse, walked out, your wife is like, right, well, do the bins and then we'll see where we go from here. What did you do?
Yeah.
What? Because you seem like an extremely driven dude. Like, what were you? Yeah, what were you thinking?
So I was sitting at home. Maybe a couple of weeks later, I said to myself, "Oh, do you know what I'm going to do? I've been paying so much tax. I'm going to go up to the Dole office and claim the Dole." So I go up to the Dole office and they say to me, "Have you ever think of doing a course?" And I'm looking at them going, "Feck off." So I'm not knocking the course, but it just was. So I came back and I'm sitting there, my boxer shorts and my T-shirt the following day. A guy I used to work with in GTS who had just acquired a 3G mobile license in Hutchison Whampoa, which was the holding company for Three Mobile, had just bought one in Vienna in Austria. And he rang me and he says, "Oh, do you fancy coming down to Vienna?" And I said, "Seriously, we have three kids under three. And the last one is 7 days old."
Oh, wow.
"My wife is just coming out of hospital. How on earth do you think I could come down to Vienna?" And he said to me, "Ah, come on down." And I said, "To do what?" And he says, "I know you. You could throw your hand at anything. And we just need to get this company off the ground." There was only three of us on the ground, three people there at the time. And I said, "Okay, I'll come down. I'll come down for a couple of..." He said, "Come down for a month." And I said, "Okay, I'll come down for a month." And a year and a half later, I came home.
Oh, wow.
And, but my wife is very... not an easy time for with three young kids, but she very clued into the fact of, you know, she used to laugh at me that I was in revenue generation and she was in operations.
It's a great way of putting it.
And I came home one day and she said to me, "Would you pick up the dry cleaning?" And I said, "Yeah, sure." And I go down and your man says to me, "That's 360 quid. I said, seriously, what's going on with that? 360 quid. So I go home with her and I plunk the dry cleaning on the counter. I said, 360 beep euros? What's that about? She says, "Well, you said that you were in revenue generation and I was in operations. So I took a strategic decision to subcontract out." So I never said that to her again.
That's some dry cleaners.
Oh, yeah. Well, it might have been 206. It was something astronomical. Anyway, it blew my mind at the time. So I stayed down there with Tree down in Vienna with the idea, actually, of getting involved with Tree in Dublin. That was the plan.
Okay, so they were launching a new network in over there, were they?
Yeah, they were maybe 10 years behind where Dublin was,
right,
where Ireland was.
Gotcha.
So the plan was roll out the network over there, roll out all the services that we had. And it was actually quite entertaining. The chief executive of Tree at the time, or of Hutchison Wanpo, was a Chinese guy, Canning Fok, that lived in Hong Kong. I think he was the highest paid CEO in the world. He was paid, he was on a basic of 75 million a year. And I came home one night and I said to my wife, what would you do if you were paid 75 million a year? She said, I'd work for 6 months. That would be me done.
Good answer.
So we worked over there, came back here. We were planning out PureTel. We were going to buy the GTS operation here in Ireland and run it as a going concern. And when I came back and I started looking at the numbers, it was a bit like opening up a spar shop to compete with Tesco's. Okay. There was enough network in the ground. No one wanted more network. There was enough capacity there. And I said, right, what we'll do is we'll agree wholesale agreements with some of the main players that will allow us access to their network, which was, I think their network at the time was 7 or 8% was full. So there was a huge, huge amounts of space on the networks. So we set up this thing. We set up Pure Telecom. Actually, we're 20 years in April or March or April of this year at doing it. We set up the wholesale agreements. We told the guys, we gave them all business plans as to what we do, the amount of business that we get them, run through them. And we did that. I said to Alan, my business partner, we'll give it a year. I said, you know, I can't afford to be losing money hand over fist for the rest of my life. I can give it a year, and if we can't make money or look like there's green shoots coming out of it in a year, then we'll leave it. And we did. We set it up in such a way as that if we had to shut it down, we wouldn't owe anyone any money.
Okay.
To be no debt. We didn't take salaries out of ourselves for a year, and it actually worked out really, really well.
When you were away, was this what you were planning? When you were away, were you like, right,
yes,
we'll come home, set
yeah
up a business, come home, set it up,
yeah,
so come home, set it up. Okay. So where did the idea come from?
Yeah. Well, our time in GTS, I knew the business.
Okay.
I knew the business very well. GTS had a retail business here in Ireland, and I knew we could set it up and run it and make money out of it. So it was a case of, we had the knowledge. It was just the balls to do it. And in a lot of cases, and you interview a lot of people about setting up their own businesses, all of them will tell you it's a leap of faith. You have to be the guy that will go into the next door neighbor's garden to rob the wood. You have to have the ability to take the chance. And you have to have people around you. You know, I'm very lucky, as I say, my wife is clued into me 100%. And she gives me free rein to make these decisions. The house we're in at the moment, I said to her, I bought the house before. I brought her down to see it and I said, what do you think of this house? She said, yeah, I think it has potential. What do we have to do next? And I said, not a terrible lot. We've just bought it yesterday. That's not in a bullying way. She is my controller. I'm big into the racehorses, Gary, and she said to me a long time ago, if this is a very expensive hobby you have, but if you ever infringe on our family's welfare with this, she says, I'll leave you in the morning. And I said, okay.
Fair enough. There's
marker
the line.
Taken.
You're big into buying them or betting on them? Which?
God forgive me, I used to be, my father and his family were big into going racing. And we all used to go racing quite a lot when we were kids, and just watching the horses and betting on them. And but my father was always just interested in looking at them run. He grew up in Inchicore, and he used to cycle down to Punchestown as a kid, and just looking at the horses running. I got into horses then out of that, and you know, like a lot of young fellas, started betting on the horses, and it's a mug's game for betting. It's a bit like business, but you're guaranteed to lose on horses. So we buy a few. It's probably more of a mug's game, and we've had maybe, I don't know, we got into a little syndicate with a few fellas there in 2008, and we won the Ballymore Novice Hurdle over in Cheltenham. Oh, and nice. That was the kiss of death, because you'd just won the Olympics. You've reached your peak, and you can never repeat that, not for a small owner like us. But we've had a go over the last 10 or 12 years, and we've had horses with the champion trainer, and they've still run into the wall. Still.
So it's passion,
it's kind of enjoyable. It's kind of enjoyable. But look, it's a hobby. It might be a hobby soon to come to an end, but it's a hobby.
Well, and Michael Leary's getting out of it. It might be time to follow him.
Do you know what? It's funny to look at the numbers that I was having a conversation with a guy the other day, and I said, you know, there's an Irish guy that won the Gold Cup, Donnelly, there a couple of years last year, and you have to put in huge amounts of money to win horse races, unless you're extremely lucky, like we were back in 2008. But these guys are buying horses for 500,000-700,000 euros each. They might buy 20 of them, and one of them might be a success. And that's the game. And I'm kind of more interested these days in getting on a cruise ship and going around the place rather than spending my money on a horse.
Probably a little bit less stressful, to be fair.
Yeah. Oh, well, you can't do it at the moment. Anyway.
What? Bring me back then, right? First year, Pure Telecom. What's happening?
So first year, Pure Telecom, I used to say to people, we went from the glass-plated offices watching the pheasants cross the lawn to an office down in Sallymount Avenue in Renland, Dublin, drawing lots as to who cleans the jacks on a Monday morning. So there was four of us, myself, Alan, and we enticed two poor unfortunates to come with us. And so literally no roles, no titles. It was just everyone was sales. I'd come in the morning, I'd be in at the crack of dawn every morning. We would literally sell, we'd send emails, we'd go and visit customers. We thought we'd be able to ravage GTS's customer base. We got zero of them. Our customer base ranged, it was mainly business at that point in time. So it ranged from the guy in the corner of the street to the GlaxoSmithKlines. People say to me in the past, how did you manage to get GlaxoSmithKline? And I said, well, you went down and you knocked on the front door and you just didn't go until they gave you the business. And so we were really, really hungry. Like we were young fellas. So it kind of, you know, I'm saying to someone, look, I'm going to take the telecoms problem off your desk. I'm going to put it on my desk and I'm going to save you 30 or 40% off your costs. Like, what's there to think about?
So that's what you were selling them. You were selling them a solution, right? This is your telecom solution here. I am giving you a solution.
Yeah. So again, the whole idea of, I remember we had a customer down in Waterford, and he rings me one day and he says, oh, my phones have gone down. What's the problem here, Paul? And it's a big company. And I said to him, there's no network outages. It's all internal. And he says, Well, it's not really it's not looking good for me because all my phones, we have a few hundred people down here. And I said, what can I do? And he says, I don't know. We're going to have to get a new server. And I said, well, where is the server, the new one? And he says, it's up in our office in Dublin. And I said, I'll get someone to drive down with that right now. So I got someone in the office to go out to, I think it was Clonshock or somewhere, and they picked up the server, they got in the car with it, and they drove down to Waterford, and your man was back up, and he stayed with us for years.
Those little bits.
As simple as that. As simple as that. He stayed with us for years, and... You know, the man retired and he was still a customer. They were still, it was an American multinational, it's a pharmaceutical company. But, you know, it's, that's, if you can kind of, again, it's like being, as I say, we went and we got into the residential thing in years later. But if you can carry the same mentality with you, to just service those customers and try and keep them happy, keep them wrapped up in cotton wool, then they'll never go. And it's worked for us.
So you survived the first year. What happened then?
Yeah. Then I met my second wife and she took half my assets and that was it. first year and we grew it. Years... Two to five were just literally building. And then...
Was there a point when you knew it was going to work? Was there a point either during that year?
At the end of year one.
Okay.
At the year, once I hit profitability and now what I didn't like at the end of year one is that we had a lot of customers... We were literally hitting everything that moved because cash flow is essential in any new business. So we had these call shops that were in Dublin. You went in and you made phone calls home and they had other lines of business and which we won't mention. But you went in, you made phone calls. They were actually huge users. At the time, the telephone users, that is. And we had a few of them on board, and I knew eventually they would sting me. It was like me being on the fox's back going across the stream. So we got to profitability at the end of year one, but I knew I had to change. I knew I had to get more GlaxoSmithKline and less call shops. And we did that we built it over the next 3 years. We just built and built and built. Every day we just got more and more customers. We signed up customers from all over the country, business customers. And then in year five, an Australian fella appeared on my doorstep and he said, I'm from a company called Orion Telecommunications in Australia, and we have a business in Europe called Newtel, and it's a residential business. Would you be interested in buying it? And, you know, we weren't doing too badly, but we still didn't have a pot to piss in. And I said, of course we're interested in buying it. And my business partner said to me, that's consumer telecoms. That's not core to us at all. We don't know anything about marketing or consumer marketing or any. I said, how different could it be? We just pile it into the back and let's get on with it. And, you know, the reality was it was completely different. We went from, you know, your business customers who are very bespoke. We had bespoke billing for them. The requirements were to going into this volume business. And again, I got the Australians to part with it for very little money. We grew it up to date. We've just grown it and grown it and grown it. Our business has changed over the last 20 years from when I, in 2001, I was selling a mobile phone call for 15 or 20 cents a minute. Today, I'm giving that mobile phone call away. I had zero broadband customers in 2001. The vast majority of my base is broadband customers today. So it's you know, even somebody said to me yesterday, did you ever think of changing the name from Pure Telecom? And I said, it's absolutely, you've just hit something that we've been talking about the last 3 months, that telecom is redundant. It's not telecom. It's our business is broadband and data now. And it's how we use that broadband and data. So yes, it's it might be a case of just dropping the telecom. There's clever people working on that, Gary. But
that's what I wanted to ask you. I mean, even in the last 5 years, it must have been an absolute transformation for you guys in terms of home phones. We moved house there 2 years ago. No home phone. There's no, not even, it wasn't even consideration.
Yeah. Well, you know, you look at me and my case. I built a house in Dublin 5 years ago, in Clonsky, right beside UCD in the metropolis. Do you think I could get broadband down my street? Not a chance. And even to date, I have broadband coming in from one of my competitors because I couldn't give myself broadband. So there's huge areas of the country that still can't get broadband. You still have huge areas that get shit broadband. And then you have areas that people want 1 gigabit services. And the reality is, you know what? You could suffice with 40 megs. You don't need 1 gig. But, you know, their next door neighbor has 1 gig, or
I'm just going to hold my hand up silently to say that that's me. That's what the lady actually said to me. She goes, is it not fast enough for you already? And I was like, well, no, yeah. it might not be.
No, you do need, some people do need it. But saying that, there's, as I say, we built the house in 5 years ago, and we put televisions in a few of the rooms. No one watches television in our room. They're all streaming on their iPads, on their laptops. And that's how our usage has gone from under 100 gigabits to up to, our average usage at the moment is 350 gigabits per customer per month.
Wow.
So they are plowing into it. And it's only going one way. Yes, we are shopping online. We're streaming. We're working at home. You would think it only has to go one way. But, you know, we will, and this is me and my personal opinion, we will hit a point when somebody will say, should we not be getting out of the house more? And, you know, we can't live in a shell with a broadband line coming into us. But that's maybe something I'll talk about at Mass next Sunday.
Well, hopefully soon we can actually do it. I want to ask a very simple question for someone with no kind of infrastructural mind like myself. Why is the broadband problem so bad? Like, why is it so hard for someone like yourself, the heart of Dublin, like you say, very central, to get a broadband line?
It's simple. If you look at the UK and you look at to be fair to the Brits, what they did was when they rolled out their telecommunications network, they said, right, we will bring down one line. Back in the day, one line per person going down a road. And so if there's 10 people living down there, we'll bring down 10 lines. And in Ireland, what we did was, when we said we had 10 people living down a road that wanted a telephone, we brought down one line and we split it into 10 pieces. And then when we changed over to broadband, you couldn't use that. You couldn't use that at all. It wasn't capable. So then we had to bring down, we started off relaying cable, or the network operator started laying copper cable, new copper. And then we went to fiber. And, but as I say, fiber is expensive to lay. And, you know, it's all very well relaying it around Dublin, but you go down the country and there's five guys out in the middle of a township, and you say, "Oh well, we want fiber into this township," and yes, they have to have it. It's no doubt, absolutely, but they have to kind of buy it. And I'm not saying they buy it for an astronomical amount, but they have to buy it at the same price as the guy in Dublin. But they actually have to commit to buying it. So if you look at all the plans of the network that's been rolled out over the last 10 or 20 years, they go to various places and the take-up is crap.
Right.
So then they say, well, what's the point in bringing the network down? It's the rural broadband's test beds I looked at one stage. This is now going back 7 or 8 years ago. And we had a screen in the office and they put up a satellite picture of it. And I said, zoom in on this township. And they zoomed in. And I said, where's the town centre? And they said, you're looking at it. And I said, but there's nothing there. And they said, oh, actually, there's a church and a pub. And I went, right, but where's everyone living? Well, there's, you know, they're spread out. The density is quite high or low. And I said, right. And I said, does the bus stop there? And they said, I don't know. Does the bus stop there? Why would that make any difference? Does the bus? I said, because if the bus stop doesn't stop there, it means that there's no genuine, no one's going to get on the bus there. So if you bring broadband down that same street, no one's going to get on and buy it. And it's exceptionally expensive to bring down broadband down the street. So you straight across the street from me here in City West, I have a National Broadband Ireland that the state has given €3 billion to roll out network all over the country. And it will be very interesting to see how that pans out over the next 3 years. Because to date, they've been at it, I don't know, 3 years. Is it 3 years since National Broadband Ireland has been launched? And they have 3,000 customers. You know, great return.
Like, it's such an emotive topic. But when you explain it in real simple terms like that, it makes complete sense from a business point of view, going, okay, yeah, everyone should have broadband. Absolutely. It's, you know, it's fundamental, especially when people are working from home now. But when you've figured out in a business sense, like someone from yourself who SG has to provide it, financially not.
Oh no, it's do you know what, in Scandinavia you have a statutory right to broadband in your house. They're ahead of the game. So if you're living out in an island, the government have to drag a cable across that little sea to get it to you in that island. End of story. But here it's, you know, it's a bit like my father used to bring me out for dinner and he'd say to me, you can have anything you want off the menu, but you have to eat it. And look at me now, I'm the size of a house. Obviously, I did eat it, but I'm a huge believer in rolling out broadband to rural Ireland. Everywhere should have broadband, but people have to pick it up and people have to pay for it. And if you look at, and I'm not doing the poor mouth when I say this, but you look at the price of broadband, it's going one way, it's going downwards. And the price of the amount of usage that we're using is going upwards. The cabling is going upwards. Somebody has to pay for it. And, you know, our companies, there might be, you'll have all the Netflixes and Amazon Primes in the world you want, but if you're going to have a provider that's able to give you broadband, there's going to be no podcast, there's going to be no Netflixes, there's going to be no nothing.
So what's the solution?
And again, it's funny, you know, you kind of, and we used to say this in the business, and I know my competitors would say the exact same. I build a house in Longford in a green field out in the middle of nowhere, and the county council come along to me and they say to me, yeah, you need to pay €20,000 for services. And you say, oh yeah, that's no problem, that's fine. And you need to pay 30,000 euros to get the ESP to connect up your house. Oh yeah, that's no problem at all. And you need to pay 350 euros for your broadband connection. Oh my Jesus, I couldn't do that. And it's a mindset. It's an absolute mindset. But, you know, I want to be able to wrap my customers up in cotton wool, and I want my customers to be able to get the response they want off a customer service agent. But somebody has to pay them. You know, I'm as much as I look well in a little blue and white little towel around my head, I am in Mother Teresa. I'm in it for the money. I have to make a profit. Any business has to make a profit. You know, a good deal is where we both get our bus fares home. It has to work for everyone. I love the business and I love dealing with my customers. And, you know, as I say, we do wrap them up in cotton wool. Customer service is very important to us, but it has it's a big debate at the moment as regards how do you increase your rates. And you know, I know Air can have a large chunk of the market and they can turn around in a whim and say, well, I'm going to increase my lines by 10 euros a month. But I swear to God, I don't think in the 20 years that we've been in business, I've ever increased a charge to a customer, ever. It's amazing. Sorry. And that's the political broadcast on behalf of the Paul Connell Party.
I didn't know what to say to that, to be honest. That's a fairly, when you break it down, though, it makes sense. So what's next? I'm conscious we're nearly at the hour. I want to wrap it up for you. What's next?
You know, had COVID not hit, we would have been looking at rolling out other utilities to our base. Insurance, we were very keen on power. In hindsight, the way the power prices have gone, it's probably no harm that we didn't roll out power. And there's a little bit more to power than just meets the eye. But it certainly, we're very good at what we do. We're very good at dealing with our customers. So why wouldn't we sell them apples with the oranges? We're very keen. We've still got the hunger, as much as we had 20 years ago, to do other things, to expand into different areas. And every day, I wake up every night, Gary, at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I think of things. And I nearly should have a pencil and pen, except I remember them in the morning. I don't need a pencil and pen. But I do every single night, unless I've had 50 pints the night before. I wake up at 4 o'clock.
Should see a doctor about that. What?
Yes.
I generally ask people at the end to recommend a book that's kind of made a difference to them or they've enjoyed.
The Bible, because I love to crucify people.
I don't think that's not the first one that's been recommended for various reasons.
What kind of books do I like to read? I'm a terrible goon as regards, I love drama. I love fellas racing through deserts and chasing each other and terrorists and all this stuff. I don't know whether there's any books that my wife gets me to read books to make me stop thinking and relax. As I say, I spend a bit of time down in Portugal and I'm forever, you know, she'd say to me, why aren't you just sitting down? I'm going out to look at another house. I'm going out to look at this. I'm going out to look at that. So I read books for just a distraction more than anything else. Is there books that I recommend to people, or is there books that I could get a lesson out of? I kind of look at, this is dreadful to say this, but years ago I read a book, Barbarians at the Gate. I don't know whether you ever read
it. Yeah, heard of it.
It's all capitalism. It's all I love the ability to make a few quid and the people's sharpness to make a few quid. I suppose in my older age, I've mellowed a bit. As I said to you before, I'm involved with the DSPCA and I do a lot with them as regards the animal welfare. The DSPCA is the largest animal welfare charity in the country, and they do a colossal amount. And I seem to be going soft in my old age. I just need them to get it. I might write my own book, Gary.
Well, that's...
You'll be in it. You'll be in it.
I could ghostwrite that one for you. Instead, do you know what? Instead of recommend the book, I'm going to recommend that people make a little donation to the DSPCA. Yes. I think that's a good, I've done some days up there myself. It's an incredible setup.
Great setup. And do you know what? We're in the process of building. They people leave the money occasionally, and they've been gathering money to try and build a world-class veterinary clinic up there. And they're going to transfer, and they're going to do it now over the next year or two.
Brilliant.
And it's going to make the place a formidable establishment. So whether it's dogs, you know, I've seen horses that people set on fire with gas cans. It's just dreadful what people can do with animals. And these guys are sitting up there and they're just playing a blinder. And most of them have come from fantastic jobs, and they just kind of, this is what I want to do. I want to spend my time with animals.
It's brilliant.
It's as I say, it's very, people say to me when they hear this, I went soft, but I suppose I have gone soft a little.
You've even mellowed in this hour. I've heard the change ending in the hour. Paul, thank you so much for coming on. Where can people learn a little bit more about yourself and about Pure Telecom?
Well, online, puretelecom.ie, and it's all there. All you have to do, Google. And by all means, if anyone ever had a question for me, send me an email. Send me a paul.connell@puretelecom.ie. Be delighted to meet anyone. I'm always good for a free cup of coffee.
Perfect. Listen, Paul, thanks so much for coming on.
Right. Thanks, Gary.
And that was my chat with Paul. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. As I said at the start, go to mrgaryfox.com, join my email newsletter, which goes out every Monday, and you are in the chance to win €1,500. I'll see you back here next Monday for the Idea Lab.